Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The COVID-19 pandemic has put an enormous amount of pressure on the state's network of healthcare clinics. These clinics provide essential services for many patients who don't have health insurance coverage or are underinsured. What have been some of the major challenges facing these clinics during the pandemic? How have they survived? What steps were needed to protect the health and safety of both patients and healthcare providers? And what are some of the most important concerns going forward for these clinics? Joining us today are two people who have a lot of experience in this area. Heidi Soulis is the director of the Open Door Clinic in Middlebury. She has a master's degree in public health from Yale Medical School. And also Dr. Alan Ramsey, who is the medical director of the People's Health and Wellness Clinic in Barrie. And previously, Dr. Ramsey served as a member of the Green Mountain Care Board. I'd like to welcome both of you to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Just to get an overview to start with, I'd love to get a sense of the range of services that are available at your clinics, your target audience, and roughly how many patients you see every month. Heidi, tell us about the Open Door Clinic in Middlebury.
Okay, well, good afternoon, and it's a real pleasure to be on with you this afternoon. So a little bit about us is that we are a free clinic, and our target audience is the uninsured and underinsured community members, essentially, in our service area. And we really provide a very broad depth of services, from acute care to chronic care. We do a little bit of mental health. We have a dental health program. We have a very well-established outreach program, which we can get into later. And we also have a navigation program and hire an assister to help people understand insurance options, what might be affordable for them, and to go through the process of helping them determine whether or not they can afford health care, what might be the best plan, so that, with health insurance on board, they may have a little more stability in their life. But until they make that decision, we are here to provide care for them.
Can you give us a sense of how many patients you see perhaps in the course of a month?
Sure. Well, I can tell you that last year we saw a total of 994 distinct or unduplicated patients. So if we take that number, that would be about 82 patients per month.
And just to be clear, so our listeners understand, uninsured, that one is clear to them. When you say you're serving some people who are underinsured, what does that exactly mean?
It means that, and if I may, Bob, just back up a step. People do have to meet income guidelines to qualify and be eligible for our services. And essentially, we see people around 300% of the federal poverty level. And what that might look like, just so listeners can follow, is that for a family of four, that would mean that if they make $78,000 or less, they qualify for our services. So we're kind of a safety net between Medicaid and those who have to find private insurance, although the people between 300 and 400% of the poverty level can be, it's a very, it's a tough situation for them in terms of affordability. But anyway, underinsured is something that at our clinic we define as if someone is spending more than 10% of their gross income on their health insurance, then they well may qualify for care with us.
Great. Thank you, Heidi. Alan, tell us about the mission of the People's Health and Wellness Clinic in Barrie. Hi there, Alan. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Bob. I'm having some connection difficulties, so but it's good to be with you. And I missed some of Heidi's comments, but those that I did hear kind of reflect some of the same services that we provide at the People's Clinic.
And Alan, tell me, if the People's Health and Wellness Clinic wasn't there, where would these patients go for their health care needs?
Well, they would avoid as much contact with the healthcare system as possible so as not to incur personal costs. They would utilize the emergency room at Central Vermont Medical Center. They'd utilize the urgent care centers in our area. And they would probably use retail care through their pharmacies if they can get if they could get vaccines there. They might use online care. They'd look up their problems on the internet and do the best they could to manage them without the help of a professional.
And do you find that a fair number of your patients put off medical care for a while until it becomes, in their minds, a more serious concern?
Absolutely. That has been existed even before the pandemic. The people who would avoid care, would come in to see me later in the course of their illness than what I would ever see in my practices outside of the free clinic. So I would say to myself, not infrequently, why did this person wait so long? And because it wasn't something I was used to seeing. But having the free clinic network throughout Vermont, I think really does enhance the ability of people to safely get care without worrying about the cost.
Heidi, let's go back to the middle of March of this year. The pandemic is starting to hit Vermont. There's a lot of concern this virus is going to spread like wildfire. Then Governor Phil Scott issues his stay home and stay safe order. We begin to see many aspects of the Vermont economy closing down. How did all of this at the beginning of the pandemic affect you at the Open Door Clinic in Middlebury?
Gravely, I would say. None of us here had ever experienced a pandemic, and we were in the face of having to pivot and make decisions as things were unfolding and as none of us really understood this virus. And so some of the first things we did, and I don't know if listeners understand, but the real backbone of all of our free clinics are volunteers, or those of us who see patients are volunteers, from providers to administrative assistants who really help us accomplish the work that we do. And that includes our medical directors, like Dr. Ramsey, and for us here in Middlebury, it's Dr. Lynn Larson. And so it was really through her guidance and leadership, along with our nurse clinic manager, Jody Brakely, who really got their teeth into how to keep us safe, next steps, et cetera. And pretty much in concert with Governor Scott, we stopped our in-person clinics very early on in mid-March. And from there, we went to, and another thing about us that is unique is that about a third of our distinct patients are migrant workers who face many barriers to care, including among the most basic language barriers. And one of the ways that we've always supported them, or that we have come to support them over time, is to have Spanish-speaking staff and interpreters and the like. So, we stopped seeing people in person. We put messaging on the front of our door and on our phone to say, we are still here. We're here to help you, and we want to help you. Our nurses here have had a very strong tradition of providing phone triage to our patients. And so they continue to do that in an even more robust way. They took the phone home at night. So in some ways, we were providing more comprehensive coverage than usual for the first number of weeks. And then within, and we'd always done a little bit of telehealth by way of using an app called WhatsApp to communicate with our Spanish-speaking migrant workers and some of the Jamaican apple pickers because they don't have phone plans. So we had some familiarity with those platforms, but we hadn't really been providing telehealth in the fullest sense of the term. And so we turned to that and began to investigate that and started using that within a couple of months. So, and then, of course, beyond our capacity and beyond our care, we would refer people to Porter Medical Center Express Care and the ED when absolutely necessary. So I would like to let Dr. Ramsey speak, so I'm happy to take more questions. But
yeah, let me just ask you a quick question, Heidi, and that in when you closed down the in-person visits and went to phone care and telehealth services, how did you find that your patients reacted to that?
I think that that's a layered, I will provide a layered answer. I think patients felt secure and grateful that we were here. I think there was, we saw among the general population, a reluctance, to come in for care. But as we weren't providing that and were providing, I think, some very viable options for them, we were able to mitigate that concern somewhat. Though, we continue to see more than traces of that reluctance. And I was just talking with Jody earlier today, and we still accompany some people over to the hospital to help people get their labs, et cetera, because they're scared. They're scared of getting COVID. So I think there are many domino effects of this pandemic and what we've been through and the messaging we've received that are going to have long-lasting effects that we have to be very much aware of as we really try to increase access to care and encourage people to come in when they really need to come in.
Alan, how did the initial emergence of this pandemic affect your operations over at the People's Health and Wellness Clinic in Barrie?
Well, we transitioned our care services almost completely to telemedicine at the onset of the pandemic. Our facility was just not adequate for any safe in-person visits for our volunteer staff. So we went through a process of transitioning to the new normal, which I call telemedicine. The second thing we found the need to do was to provide a medical support team for our homeless population. Just like Heidi at the Open Door Clinic provides these services to migrant farm workers, we found the need now to participate in helping assist our homeless population in terms of their healthcare needs. This was a hyper-vulnerable population, I would call it, because of the social issues that the homeless population need to deal with. So those were two things that happened for us at the People's Clinic. We had to go find another facility, and we had to develop protocols, just like Heidi, for keeping our volunteers safe when we did resume inpatient visits. Telemedicine for us, I kind of have tracked the pros and cons because I do think it's the new normal. I don't think it's going to go away. For our patients and for our volunteers, it provided fairly convenient access. It was a way to reconcile medication lists. It promoted home monitoring for our patients, so encouraging them to get blood pressure cuffs to monitor their blood pressure, O2 sats if they needed that in the context of a respiratory illness, blood sugar testing, and it was safer because it didn't require people to come to the clinic or go to the hospital. It also became a screening tool for us to determine who would be best suited for in-person visits at the clinic when we reopened. There certainly are cons to the whole process of telemedicine as well. I calculated that anywhere between 25 and sometimes 30% of my visits would benefit from an actual in-person exam. I felt like we had some significant broadband connection issues in central Vermont. And also, we even would encounter patients who had limited phone minutes available to them. In terms of the telemedicine process itself, for established patients, I felt like it went fairly well. The new patient trust issue, when you can't really be with them in the room, was something that does kind of concern me. But that's our sense about telemedicine at the People's Clinic. So we have found a new site, and we have begun in-person visits. We have been able to develop personal protective equipment and procedures and policies that keep our volunteers safe.
Bob, could I interject one other thing?
Absolutely.
In terms of supporting our patients, I think two other key elements of our work in the early days were through outreach and navigation. So traditionally, here at the Open Door Clinic, we do an outreach program every fall where we visit a number of farms. Julia Doucette, our outreach nurse, and a cohort of volunteers visit farms, provide flu vaccines and the like, and some health education. And so it was Julia's understanding through her reading early on that between everything going on at the administrative level around immigration and people feeling, you know, scared about their status, and with a pandemic being even further isolated on the farms, we did make the decision very early on to put together COVID kits. And Julia called farmers and made arrangements to go out and drop off kits to all of those who were interested. And I don't remember the exact number now, but I think it was upwards of 51 or 57 farms and houses. And these kits were literally brown paper grocery bags filled with the very basic of supplies, like masks. So many people in our community had made masks and donated them to us. It was incredible. Hand sanitizer, soap, COVID education materials in Spanish, et cetera. Very basic materials. But that, I think, was an imperative and a great move and show of support and helping keep people safe. And then, you know, Vermont Health Connect, our statewide marketplace, opened up enrollment once again because they realized that people were losing jobs, their insurance status was changing, and they extended that deadline over many, many months. And so our navigator, or sister, was hard at work supporting all of those people who whose status had changed, and that puts you in a very puts one in a very vulnerable position. And I think these are areas, particularly the navigation, that is a kind of shared mission among all of the free clinics, and we do invaluable work in the state to help people with their insurance. And, you know, during this extremely stressful time, I think it was an incredible service, and it was great that the marketplace stayed open month over month over month.
Alan, you mentioned just before the break that for new patients, this telemedicine thing can be hard. I've got to imagine it's very difficult for a patient who is talking to a healthcare provider for the very first time to feel comfortable in a telemedicine setting.
Yes, I have found that to be the case, though the way to reconcile that problem is to deal on the first visit with a very specific issue and make sure you plan a follow-up visit so that you do develop a relationship that can evolve into an in-person visit at some point in the future. So there are some ways to get around this new patient trust issue, I would call it.
We're going to see if we can connect with Sean again. Sean, who is in Rutland. Hey, Sean, we hope you're there.
Hey, I'm here. Well, as a small business owner in the health field, not a medical doctor, but a health club, I just wanted to, you know, kind of touch base on, you know, difficulties not having that in person, face to face when trying to get people healthy. And not only that, but, you know, we talk about the new normals, which is very important to make sure that everybody stays safe, because, of course, we don't want anybody to jeopardize their health and wellness. But we also, I think, are starting to lose sight of the old normal and some of the old normal that was very, very good when dealing with, you know, not only face-to-face contact, but, you know, in this health question that we have, you know, face-to-face is always the best way to do that. You know what I mean?
Yes, and I get the impression from both of our guests today that they're not abandoning in-person visits as much as supplementing those in-person visits with some telemedicine. Does that strike you as a good approach, Sean?
Oh, absolutely. And I guess I wanted to reiterate the fact that, you know, we're going to be handed things from, you know, the local government in the name of being safe. And I guess what my point was, as a small business owner, you know, and somebody, you know, just trying to help my local community, not only stay in shape, but continue to build immunities and you know, be more preventative, so that if anything were to happen, whether it be COVID or the regular flu or anything, that they're better well protected. And sometimes we want to make sure that, you know, we give that outlet, even though precautions need to be taken. You know, we don't take it too far and hurt small businesses in the process.
Okay, Sean, thanks very much for your phone call. Alan, I know that you're very passionate about prevention care and primary care for individuals. Have you been able to translate that passion into your work at the clinic and incorporate it for as many patients as you can?
Well, I think the most important thing for me is that Vermonters have access to health care, especially, and this was my passion even before the pandemic. And now to see that the number of uninsured in Vermont has doubled in the last 4 months and is now up to a little over 7%, I learn about the difficulties of being uninsured every time I go to work at the People's Clinic. So my concern is that number is going to continue to increase. We always, as Heidi said, are going to have to deal with the underinsured, whether they're economically underinsured or whether they're psychologically underinsured, meaning they just fear coming to the doctor because of the potential risk of a large deduction or deductible. So We're going to be struggling with the uninsured and the underinsured even after this pandemic has run its course. And, you know, let's hope that's as soon as possible. But that's been my passion, and that's what I worry about in terms of where we're moving our health policy decisions now. Because in my 40 years in Vermont as a family doctor, the best job in the world, I think, most all of the health policy decisions have focused on increasing access to health care. Whether it's Dr. Dinosaur, whether it's, you know, protection from pre-existing conditions, protection for age discrimination, Catamount Plan, VHAP, and finally Act 48. That's where we have focused on. And now we have kind of lost that focus. We are not heading in a health policy direction that is going to relieve the stress on Vermonters who are uninsured or underinsured. That's my fear.
Heidi, I'm wondering, you mentioned migrant workers over in Addison County. We had a case of an outbreak in Shoreham. I'm wondering, is there any information that you have that you could update us with that issue?
Well, our outreach nurse and one of our volunteer providers is out there this morning doing some more kind of final follow-up around health status in the hopes that everyone will be able to be released out of quarantine, but we won't know the results of that for a couple of days. My understanding is that a number of workers are back to work, and things are certainly moving in the right direction.
And Heidi, for those people who are listening who feel that maybe Vermont's been too cautious in its approach to the coronavirus pandemic, that it's had a really negative impact on the state economy, and the state needs to loosen up a little bit. What would you say to those folks?
I would say I hear you. I am aware that there have been significant and severe concessions and losses for businesses, for us socially as a people. There have been a lot of losses, and yet I feel that the efforts that our governor and legislature trickled down to the town levels has been instrumental in keeping us safe and has made a huge difference. I'm proud of the fact that, you know, we're one of the few states in the nation who have really kept this nasty thing in check. And I think it's because of our, I would like to think it's because we're a respectful community who want to help each other and who realize that our actions create reactions and consequences for other people. And so, you know, I feel as though, as hard as it is for me on a personal level with not being able to connect with family and other things, that we need to stay vigilant. Our actions, our masking, our physical distancing, our, you know, not gathering in big groups and close quarters is really paying off. And that doesn't address the suffering of our businesses and some of the other losses people have felt, loss of job, loss of income, loss of child care. It is an extremely difficult time. But I think health is first and foremost, and this has, you know, horrific ramifications, the disease itself, which I think we're going to be feeling for months to come. So I think we need to put our heads together on how we can bolster our economy and how we can be creative around helping people survive. But I think the measures we've taken health-wise are critical.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Randall, who's calling from New Haven. Hey, Randall, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm a veterinarian in the New Haven area. I'm a mobile practitioner. I've been a mobile practitioner for quite a long time. And I just wanted to add a comment that I right now have a mobile van that has all blood machines on it for doing CBCs and diffs and comps and coags. It's fully stocked as far as the pharmacy goes, refrigerator, vaccines. And I think we're at a point where having mobile practitioners start to be part of the medical system that could maybe take up that 30% of the patients that need to be seen that one physician was talking about that should be seen. It's completely computerized, so when I come in at night, I sync it to my main computer, and that could be done with the medical system. It could be the person who does the mobile visit could come in, put it in their computer. That computer again could be synced to the main computer. So if that person has to go into the emergency room or whatever, that all the information would be there. So I think it's the technology is there now, and I think the opportunity is there that we should start thinking about adding some mobile practitioners to take up some of the gap that we're seeing now in the medical system. Plus, for infectious diseases, even if it wasn't a pandemic, I mean, you know, if it was pertussis or influenza or whatever, I think it's probably time to look at that as a possible solution with everything
okay.
else we're doing.
Yeah, Randall, very interesting idea. Alan, what do you think about that, having more of a mobile practitioner and being able to go out in the community? Is that something that would be realistic for the People's Health and Wellness Clinic?
I know that mobile clinics have been utilized to care for the uninsured in other parts of the country. It's not something that certainly we've pursued or thought about. But, you know, we're entering a time of trying to be innovative, trying to establish a new normal for delivery of healthcare services, getting to people rather than expecting them to come to us certainly has an attractiveness to it. Some of that is what we do with telemedicine, but what the caller describes is a much more significant model. I want to get back to my comment about how we, at the People's Clinic, one of the things we had to manage was to get more involved with our homeless population in Central Vermont, and which meant moving people out of congregate living settings at the Good Samaritan Haven homeless shelter into motels where they had private rooms. And that was led by both the staff, Rick DeAngelis at Good Samaritan Haven, and our executive team, Rebecca Goldfinger Fine and Nicole Valcor, so that we were able to take a highly vulnerable population and put them in a protective environment and give them services that they needed. When I think about mobile care, that was a model that evolved fairly quickly. And to date, and it kept this population very safe from COVID. So there are a lot of things that are going to happen now, not only in relation to the pandemic, but in terms of how we deliver healthcare in the most efficient and patient-centered way as we move forward.
And I would just like to add, curiously, that the Open Door Clinic really had its origins in the form of a mobile clinic. It was a big blue school bus that traveled around the county. And while we aren't a mobile clinic per se, we have dabbled in this arena on a very small scale when doing our farm visits. So it hasn't been unusual over the past few years that a provider, a nurse practitioner, or a physician, it's usually a physician, I believe, will go out with Julia and her team and actually do a couple of full-fledged healthcare visits while on the farm. So we have integrated this notion at a very small scale, and as Alan said, I think this pandemic forces us to really think outside the box and think creatively, especially for those of us who are dealing with some of the most vulnerable populations. But these could have applications for our general population, and who knows, maybe be more affordable as we move forward in our evolution.
Alan, it looks like this pandemic is going to be with us for a little while, who knows how long. What are the major challenges going forward for your clinic in Barrie in dealing with the pandemic?
As Heidi mentioned, all of the free clinic network in Vermont rely on clinical volunteers. Many of these clinicians have other jobs, but take it upon themselves to provide this as a community service. And that's what's great about Vermont, really, is that people care about each other, people trust each other. So one of the challenges is going to be maintaining a viable volunteer staff. One of the challenges is going to be keeping those volunteer clinicians risk as low as possible for exposure to COVID, meaning maintaining adequate protective equipment, personal protective equipment, updating our policies and procedures as things change, educating staff, maintaining for us a whole new facility. So there are challenges that we're going to face, particularly when, as I say, we're expecting larger numbers of people to access our facilities and request care. So those are a few of them, but I'm not too worried, really, because people, clinicians and volunteers step up in Vermont when they're asked. And that's really what makes this state special.
Heidi, what do you see as some of the major challenges facing you in Middlebury as this pandemic moves forward?
You know, I would echo all of what Dr. Ramsey just shared. I think one of our biggest concerns to date has been mitigating and minimizing risk for our volunteers, many of whom are in... many of whom are older, like me. Now that I'm 61, I will align myself with them. We are now in a higher risk category relative to COVID. And, you know, we've been really concerned about not increasing risk for our volunteers. And as Alan said, and yet we rely heavily upon them. So that's one factor. I think another challenge, as Alan was alluding to, is making sure that people who need us know about us and have the courage to seek us out, have access to finding us. You know, I think that basic old access to care, do they know where we are in the community? Do they have transportation to get to us? If they don't, can we put our heads together and think of more creative ways to get to them so that we don't see more delayed care and more significant illness derived from that dynamic? And I also think just, you know, the kind of depressive nature of this pandemic and its clutches on all of us and, you know, keeping the chin up, so to speak, and not letting it get us down, keeping it in its rightful place, and not trying to let it deter us too much from the work that we all love to do and pride ourselves in doing, because, you know, I think all of the free clinics, of which there are 9 in Vermont, play a very significant role in the delivery of health care in all of our communities. And I agree with Alan that it's likely if we had to roll the die, there is going to be more demand as people face more instability or prolonged instability because of loss of jobs, because of food insecurity, because of homelessness and the like.
Let's go back to our callers and get a quick call in from Jean in Randolph. Hi, Jean. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I work as a nutritionist, a dietitian nutritionist in one of the large medical centers here. And what I've noticed since COVID is we were able to ramp right up immediately and provide telehealth services to patients at their homes or wherever they are. So as a nutritionist, trying to help patients make behavior changes, which include everything from hypertension and blood sugar management to weight loss and management for heart failure and things like that. With patients being able to use telehealth, in Vermont in particular, if they're on Medicaid, patients have access to a smartphone because of the way that Vermont Medicaid is structured. And so those patients haven't really had to miss a beat with healthcare as far as reaching us and us reaching them, which has been absolutely phenomenal. That contrasts with patients on Medicaid in New Hampshire who don't have access automatically because of the state Medicaid to a smartphone And so then we just have to use regular telephone visits with them, which is also very effective. But I just wanted to say, I hope moving forward that insurance companies will recognize the benefits of having smartphone capability in the hands of people who may have the least access to healthcare, and that also they would, the insurance companies would pay for preventive services such as mine. Right now I have a job because my department pays for me. They don't bill for my insurance, don't bill insurance company for my services because they believe it's so strongly that patients need access to reliable nutrition care. So those are just some thoughts I wanted to put out there. Thank you.
Jean, thank you very much. We appreciate your phone call. We're almost out of time. Alan,
Bob,
maybe we can get a... Yes, Heidi.
I wonder
go
if
go
I
right
could,
ahead.
Not to be combative toward Jean by any means, but, you know, there are so many dichotomies or of depravity, really, in within our communities. Access, that, you know, she made great points to people who really can afford smartphones or have smartphones. But we're seeing so many issues around, it's great if we can get tablets, but then we have to think about what does it mean to get those in people's hands? Can they afford a plan? Do they have Wi-Fi access? Do they have the facility to use a computer or a tablet? You know, and so it can be a great piece of the solution puzzle, but I think that there are so many issues that, you know, so many access issues that we don't always think about necessarily because we're not acquainted with all of the people who comprise our population. Some of these things will have to be teased out a lot further before it becomes a viable means for real access to health care.
Very good point, Heidi. We're almost out of time. Alan, a lot of talk going on now about when will there be a vaccine? Could it be a couple of months? Could it be many more months? Could it be a couple of years? When that vaccine is available, do you have the expectation that it will be available for your patients as well?
Well, that's to be determined. I would certainly hope that the vaccine is available to those first who are most vulnerable and those who are most directly caring for people with COVID. Now, I believe that vulnerable populations and certainly include those who are homeless, those who have food insecurity, financial stresses, transportation issues, live in a congregate setting. So I don't know. I don't know. It's really hard to tell how the vaccine will be distributed once it's deemed first step to be effective. But I certainly hope that a vulnerable population like those who are uninsured, underinsured, or dealing with chronic health issues are able to have access to the vaccine.
And Alan, just very, very briefly, do you think it's going to take a while for this vaccine to be distributed to people at large in a safe manner?
I think that's a very I think it'll be a very difficult operational and logistic process. You know, there's just no way to get around that. We've mm-hmm. seen this in other vaccine other vaccination programs, such as I remember swine flu. We still have a large number of people in the population who don't trust vaccines. And there is the whole vaccine development process has been politicized. So all of these things are going to play a role.
Well, this has been a fascinating look at the role that local clinics play in our healthcare system. Many thanks to our guest today, Heidi Sulis of the Open Door Clinic in Middlebury and Alan Ramsey of the People's Health and Wellness Clinic in Barrie. We really appreciate you taking the time today to talk to us about this very important issue.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having us.